our focus will be on a woman peace thrower, and that woman peace thrower called by a people. Let me put that up here. Ko gangmo. Ko is the word for woman. Gangmo is another word for peace. You see in this word for peace, this same term here, ga, which means to cool, or to pacify, or to comfort. So we'll be meeting this term in the ritual descriptions I'll share with you. And she works with sori leaves which are placed in a pot, a clay pot of water. She is, we might say, a custodian of a peace pot. We in Native American culture have heard about peace pipes. Among the Baya people, there is what we might call a peace pot. In the Baya language, that's called a zora. I write what looks like a backward C here, a phonetic symbol for the off sound. This word, zora, and I could complete it because we're not so familiar with it, is the name of that peace pot, or sometimes called zora gammo. For blessing, she works for blessing. I'd like to tell you a little story as we get into our subject matter today, which again has its focus on the sori tree, but not yet on this woman peace thrower. And it's a hunting story, which is to say it's about the quest for food. The Baya people, of whom there are something like a half million in those two African nations today, are traditionally hunters and gatherers, although they also cultivate manioc or cassava. Manioc, cassava, two words for the same tuber plant. Adamu and Buba left their village at about the same time, taking about the same direction into the bush as they went off early one morning on a hunt. Adamu came upon a bush buck, released his arrow, and followed then the traces of blood to the place where the animal lay dying. As he was about to butcher his animal so he could take the meat home to his family in the village, arrives Buba and starts yelling at Adamu, "Get away from my animal! What are you doing cutting up my animal?" And so a big fight ensues between Adamu and Buba, until finally Adamu, who had killed the animal, says to Buba, "All right, let's not kill each other over this animal. I give it to you. Take it, it's yours." And he went home. But in the weeks and in the months that followed, Buba had no success on the hunt whatsoever. He was not in good health, and when he went hunting, it seemed that the animals were rather hunting him. To the point where Adamu, who saw what was happening, said to himself, "If I do not intervene, certainly Buba will die. But I do not want him to die." So early one morning, Adamu filled a new calabash, one out of which no food had ever been eaten, filled a new calabash with fresh, cool water and sori leaves. And he went and stood in front of Buba's house and called out to him, "My brother, come see what I have brought to you." And Buba came and stood on the threshold of his house. As Adamu said to him, "I know why the animals are hunting you, and I know that if I do not wash you today, you will die. But because I do not want you to die, I'm going to wash you with this clean water and these sori leaves." So Adamu washed Buba as he stood there on his threshold, saying as he washed him, giving a blessing to him as he washed him, "Now may you be well. May the sin which you did against me be washed away, so that you can be well and hunt again for your family." One little example where sori is central again in the in a ritual practice of the Baya people seeking what we might say the salvation, the healing, the blessing of this thief. There's even a bit of a gospel note there. Adamu was under no compulsion to go and bless the one who had wronged him. But as a custodian again of sori, he himself became a sori person, as the Gbaya idiom would put it, in going to bring healing into that situation. There are men in Gbaya culture who are sori persons. And I've talked about some of those. For example, yesterday we looked at a very long and detailed purification rite where the person who was in charge, who presided at the rite, at all the ritual, was a man. Today is especially Ladies' Day, as most of the descriptive material that I'll be sharing focuses on the tasks performed in Baya society by a priestess. But these are lay priests and lay priestesses. There is no order of priesthood, as, for example, the Levitical priesthood among the people of Israel, or even the ordained priesthood that we know in the Christian Church. That's not the case among the Gbaya, but in a Gbaya village, there will inevitably be the woman who throws peace. And as we shall see, she is an eminently important sori person in Gbaya society. For example, as the person who assures that the way on the Gbaya quest for food be clear and clean. You don't just go on the quest for food any old way. There is a right way. And we'll look at that way together now. And I will first describe how she washes people from her peace pot, the zora. Helen Laka. Now, when I use that name Helen, her Baya name is Laka, but she is a Christian, and she describes a task she had performed before she became a Christian. She was a woman about 60 years old when I visited with her, and she had served her village as a kopigangmo, or a kogangmo, as I've written. Kopigangmo, pi there is the verb for throw, woman who throws peace. She explains that the chief's mother in her village, called Lakakombo, had been peace thrower, but when that old lady died, the people entrusted to her as wife of the chief the village peace pot, the ritual pot of peace and blessing, and the peacekeeping tasks which revolve around this peace pot. Her peace pot was in the chief's house, under his bed. A little hole had been dug there, and the zora, the peace pot, carefully placed in the cool earth, some dirt pushed up around it to hold it there firmly. She summoned several older women from the village to gather around the peace pot. Not just anyone was called, only the older, well-respected village women. Helen went to the stream to draw water, carried the water to her peace pot, and poured it all in. All the women held leaves in their hands. The first leaves were always sorry leaves. Then Kelu and Nor and Danu, Sarwese, Ganaguna, Vinudop, Vinugri, Lungba, and Lionudoma. Now the Baya are very precise as regards which leaves are these peace-bringing leaves, which must be in the peace pot. The women brought all of these leaves to the Zora and put them into the water. Helen explains that whenever the village men wanted to go hunting, they would gather in the chief's compound. She dipped water from her peace pot with a new calabash, and she poured water, first of all over their hands. Then they brought their spears and their bows and their knives and their arrows, and she poured water from her peace pot over all of these weapons, saying, "Go in peace. May nothing harm you. Kill many animals, and bring back the meat to me." As she blessed them, they dipped water from her calabash and washed their hands and their faces. Helen blessed them again. "May your weapons see clearly. May they hit the mark." After the hunt, when they had killed many animals and brought back some of the meat, they brought back the meat to the village. The hunters took a little bit of blood from the animals they'd killed and brought it to her peace pot and put some of that blood into the peace pot from some of those animals. They poured blood into the pot, put a cover onto the pot, and then they went on home. The hunters' wives then prepared a great feast and brought food to the chief's place, and there everyone ate the meal together. When they had eaten, the women ululated their joy and their peace. Now, the Baya have a very, you know, what ululate, what the term means for folk who live in the Swiss Alp, I think. And it's something that I just would not risk trying to reproduce here. I did. I think some things would break. But it's a very piercing ululation to express joy. Often during a sermon in church, if there's something that really makes the women happy, they'll break out with these ululations. And if you're not used to that, you really wonder if they're on the warpath or what's going on. They ate that meal together, and the women ululating their joy and the thanks of the women who had brought food to the village. But before the older women went home, they gathered again around the peace pot. They brought water, which had been used at the feast for washing hands. They poured that water into the pot, and then they invoked this blessing. "May peace reign in our village. May nothing harm us. May peace reign in our village. May there be no quarreling among our young men. May they speak softly and peacefully to each other. May food be abundant in our village. May there be no quarreling among our young men." On the quest for food, that's just most essential. If there is quarreling between those who are on that quest for food, there simply will be no success on the hunt. And the blessing of water from the peace pot, the blessing of sore leaves, is to put peace into the hearts of these hunters on the quest for food so that it may come off in the right way, the clear and the clean way. Hawarmo mesa, the Baya would put it, for the way of things to be clear and clean. And for the way of things to be clear and clean, whether it's on the hunt or in countless other circumstances, sore is right at the center of all of that. Now, you remember again that the series is about foreshadowings of the gospel, which again is a reminder about my perspective as a Christian as I look at some of these meanings in Baya ritual. Well, after this blessing, the women returned to their homes, but Helen stayed by her peace pot and called the chief over to the pot, and he rolled up the robes covering his shins, and Helen the peace thrower took water from her clay pot to wash his shins, saying, "Walk in peace and health. May nothing harm you." And Helen explains that everything we did. Now, she's speaking as a Christian, but she's reflecting back on that experience as she was this woman peace thrower in her village. Everything we did, she said, was for peace and for joy. That's the purpose, the intention, what was meant in those rites. Now, if you ask her further, well, now you're a Christian. What's that all about? And she said some intriguing things about that. Yes, I was washed then one day in the waters of baptism, where I died and rose with Jesus. Jesus' blood is in the water, she said. Again, an image out of her own experience. You remember, said, when the hunters came back with those animals, some of that blood went into the water to assure well-being on future hunts. Kind of the meaning in that circumstance, which she is sort of transposing here as she interprets the meaning of baptism for herself. Jesus' blood is in the water. Now, when I inquired into the what we might call the relative importance of priests and priestesses in Baya society, some of the Baya told me that this woman who has this role in a village is second only to the role of a priest who is called by the Baya a one urkau. Now, Kau is the territorial spirit, and among the Gbaya, there is especially an annual rite, not a weekly rite, but especially an annual rite of contact with the territorial spirit. And the person, again referred to as a Sore person, he must be a calm, reasonable person, person who presides at these rites, at Wura Kau, which is really praying to Kau, the territorial spirit, is considered the most significant, the most important person that we might call who has a priestly role. But right next to that person would be this woman peace thrower. On the one hand, the priest, in this case for the cult rites, territorial spirits, those rites are sacrificial rites, where, for example, a chicken will be killed and offerings will be made. The woman peace thrower, I've run across no circumstances where they are involved in sacrifices or in the shedding of blood or in offerings, for that matter, but always as custodian of the sore and the peace pot in which sore leaves are placed in fresh water. But the two, might say, are go hand in hand. They're complementary. Again, the male-female complementarity in society to hold things together. And that's also significant that for a whole peace, a wholeness in assuring peace in a society, there is both male and female role, which these roles complement each other. As again, I explained her peace pot, the sore is always number one leaf there. I put this word gangmo on the board. Gangmo are rites and prayers accomplished in the chief's compound, the purpose of which is peace and prosperity for the village. And the kogangmo, the woman peace thrower, is the person who presides over these rites. And then sore is the tigangmo, ti meaning tree, and again, the tree of peace. The peace tree at the center of these rites. There could be a case made, I think, as we've looked at sore, several of you have been here for several sessions, case made for this woman really as the principal custodian in Baya society, the principal custodian of peace, and the peace tree, the sore tree. as those leaves in that peace pot are always present in a village, always under the chief's bed. And water in that pot, as we'll see, must never evaporate, which would symbolize the going away of the blessing. Always must keep water in that pot. And she herself may be called Sore, or Soregamo, in the village. Now, a couple of my Gaya friends explained that the peace pot is fixed in the earth directly under the chief's bed, and ideally, the woman peace thrower is the wife or one of the wives of this chief. However, if the chief has no wife whose character qualifies her for the work, because it isn't just automatic as wife of the chief that you are going to be peace thrower in the village, depends on her character. It is possible that another woman, another middle-aged or an elderly woman, would be chosen for this task. She must in any case be of a calm disposition and of spotless reputation. The age factor is significant in that she must be free of any association whatsoever with sexual promiscuity. She must be of a clear and clean character as a sore person. Now, according to my Baya friends, and when they explain some rituals, some language is very explicit. And I will simply use some euphemisms here by way of telling you that it is important for this peace thrower to wash herself over the peace pot. She washes her private parts over that peace pot. The point is, she washes the birth canal over the peace pot. There are matters of new birth, there are matters of fertility at issue here. And as she washes herself over the peace pot, it is she washes herself with a word of blessing. So often the gesture and the word of a prayer, an invocation kind of word, accompanies the gesture, so that as she washes herself, she may say, "May this village prosper for my husband." Occasionally, the chief calls representatives from each residential group in his village to share in a special meal. Now, some water is taken from his wife's peace pot to cook food for this meal. And you see, we get into some connotations here, which in our own culture appear as rather nasty, and so on. Explains that this washing with the cool medicine of sore and other leaves symbolizes a cooling of the birth canal through which all human beings must pass. This place of giving birth must be blessed, and it must be a blessing, because everything in this life depends on being born, as the Baya would say, Nadia, being born well. Whoever is born Nadama, badly, or by implication, illegitimately, or under bad circumstances, cannot succeed in this world. Now, in Baya ritual tradition, to do things in this way is simply to do things niyuara, in the right way. In order to do everything associated with gangmo, that is, with peace and well-being, in a clear, clean way, it all begins with washing the birth canal. That's where things begin, with birth. Birth canal of the peace thrower over her peace pot. A peaceful, successful life, we might say, is conceived, is born there. Now, in some other rites, just which are kind of linked to ideas which we find here, I've been told by a number of Baya that in the olden days, in former days, during weather on the hunt, but in times of crisis, for example, wars between village. The village warriors may, the peace thrower may stand looking out toward that place where there is danger, and the hunters will pass between her legs as they go off to war. Again, there are these ideas of being born again for the task at hand. And I've heard that example given in a number of circumstances. As regards this peace pot, again, as I said, it is never brought into the light of day. It's in a cool, dark place. If a village site is abandoned, this peace pot is transported to the new village site in the evening, because its purpose is to keep gamo, peace, coolness. Again, symbolic meanings come out of very concrete meanings and move toward the abstract, more abstract meanings. The water must therefore stay cool, and the peace pot must remain in a cool recess of earth. That water must never be allowed to evaporate. The peace pot to which I have referred thus far is for peace and well-being, understood in a comprehensive sense, and including the quest for food and the hunt. Some of my Baya friends have noted that that there is another pot kept in Baya villages, the purpose of the second pot being explicitly for getting things, for what they would call pamo. And here there are some other leaves involved called deng leaves. That is a fascinating word in Central Africa, deng. We could spell it D-E-N-G. Among a number of peoples, this seems to be a significant symbol, and the word itself means spirit further east in Africa. And the custodian of this kind of pot may also be the same woman. I have noted that the peace thrower's major pot is, however, this peace pot, and kept under the chief's bed, so that Baya understandings of peace and well-being on the quest for food or in life crisis situations appear to be linked to the blessing of fertility, for which, again, male and female collaboration is required, is indispensable. A woman is custodian of this pot, but it remains in the space of her husband, under her husband's bed. Another pot related to the peace bringer is called the Zora Dengimo, one with the deng leaves in it. Now, when villagers decide to seek a new village site, and the reasons which occasion the move of the village are not so serious as to require the coming into the village of the chief's nephew, if any of you were in on former sessions where I described the task of a chief's nephew, then the chief himself may go out and select a new site for a new village. And where is that site? Well, first of all, he seeks, again, a sori tree. And as he finds a new sori tree, he takes a leaf in his hand and knots the leaf, and as he knots the leaf, he speaks a blessing. I bind up a new village right here. May peace and health reign in this village, and may we find abundant food in this place. And then he sets about building his house right next to the sori tree. Now, the morning following the first night spent in his new house, the chief rises very early. He unties the knotted sori leaf as he says, "My village that I bound up right here, I know I now open up. May no danger come to us here. May death stay away. May our village grow. May our wives give birth to many children in this place." Now, knotting the sore leaf, as we mentioned other times, symbolizes drawing the village together in a new place where peace is established by the sore. And untying it, unknotting the sore leaf, means that the villagers have indeed settled together in a new place, and they are henceforth free to lead a new life here. I am going to note several additional ritual tasks now performed by the Kogangmo as our time moves on, and I want to have some time for some questions. Just several other interesting ritual tasks that this same woman performs. She is always going about her work so that peace may reign in the village. If a man is having hard words with someone, he may go to the peace thrower in the middle of the night. And she takes her calabash, in which sore and other leaves are submerged in water, and she washes the face of her visitor with this water, saying, "Let there be peace in the village," or "May our village grow and be strong." Sore is for cooling a fight, as we've noted, but especially when the fight is so big that no one succeeds in stopping it, the peace thrower appears. She thrusts a sore branch into the water of her calabash, into the water of her peace pot, and then she sprinkles all the fighters with sore water, saying to them, "Now cool off, stop your fighting." Now again, we have the same idiom in our own in our own culture. The fighting stops and everyone quiets down, said Igbaya. She takes water in her mouth from the calabash and sprays it out all over the ground where the villages were fighting to cool off the whole area, saying, "May all this fighting stop right now." So she fills her mouth with water and sprays it out all over the place. Reminds me of when I was, I think, in first grade, and I had just taken a mouthful of water at a drinking fountain in school, and one of my friends came up to me. I was holding the water in my mouth like this, and one of my friends came up and did this, clearly, unintentionally, I cooled him off in one fell swoop. Sore is for cooling people who have been off in a war, or people who return from prison. When such a man returns to the village, he may be met out on the path outside the village by the peace thrower, who carries a sore branch in her hand. She rubs sore on him, saying, "May you be cool." The branch is discarded, and he may then be welcomed back into the village. Now, the whole notion of being cool in our culture, it almost seems we've got some interesting links here with the Igbaya understanding. Another and really final example here, before we do some interpretation and reinterpretation, in the case where a member of the family has left the village and has been gone for a very long time, and no one knows where that person now lives, the help of the peace thrower might be sought. She takes her calabash and accompanies the person seeking her help. They proceed together out of town on the path originally taken by the missing person. And the woman says, as they stand there on the path now, looking out into the bush on the path taken by the person who has disappeared, such as these two boys whose pictures we see over in our eating area. And she says to the person with her, "Be still. I'm going to call him and listen for his voice." She calls out the missing person's name in a very loud voice until the answer is heard, "Yay!" And then the woman asks, "Did you hear that? He's not dead." She will then, according to the Baya, change that person's heart, the person who is missing. And he will know that he must return to his own people, and that his heart will not be at rest until he returns. I find that just to be an intriguing example again of this peace thrower's role in Baya society. heard this example given a number of times by people who clearly believe that that is what happens. We can think again about that role of this person creating wholeness in her village, for wholeness, for peace, not only external peace again, but here a very deeply felt internal peace of a missing person. So this woman is not only a custodian of sori, she is herself a sori person working for peace in her community. When we talked about rites of reconciliation, we talked in terms of making peace. And again, I think when we are looking at bio ways for assuring peace in a community, peace is not a passive matter. But you make peace. There are ways to make peace. This woman is the mother of peace, and she gives birth, you might say, to the well-being necessary for meaningful daily living within the Gaya community. Well, you can ask a number of questions about this woman. One question that occurs to me, and I want you to ask some questions too, but I'd like to ask some of you and get your own reactions. Do you think that these Baya rituals, which are associated with a woman peace thrower, suggest any kind of cultural rationale for the potential role of women, or the role which women might have within a Christian community? You know, that's been a matter of big discussion in the last years in our culture, the ordination of women. That's only one part of it, but the role of women in general in our culture, you know, as traditionally conceived, has really been brought into question. Here we have something from a traditional African society. Do you think that there are some rationale there from what you've heard today for some meaningful roles within the church, within the Christian community, for women? Are there cultural reasons for that? Would such roles go against the grain of the Baya people, do you think? What do you think? Thank you. This isn't a quiz, but it's just as Carlisle Holty and I were discussing, and he's so glad that he doesn't have to give tests and this kind of teaching we do at Holden College. Yes. We don't have to correct papers.
Has this tradition been in effect for many, many years?
The origins, no, I would say, are just not traceable. It is just something so deep in these symbols and in these rituals that the search for origins has more or less been given up by anthropologists, for, you know, to what is intriguing to me and to many people, I think, is that what I'm relating to you, for example, among the Gaya people, there are analogous kinds of things going on in countless societies around the globe. Relate some of this to some of Ralph Gerke's discussions in the early chapters of Genesis. He's talking about religion as human achievement. One of my questions would be if there are some things which push us beyond human achievements, you know, behind those human achievements. In other words, some God-given things, some creational things. Pastor Mueller.
Isaiah, you've been here now in most sessions.
Yeah.
It occurs to me that the concentration needs to be upon building quality relationships between people.
It's just an excellent observation. Yeah. Yeah.
And of course that's a dimension that we don't do much about.
Yes.
We, in our church here, we are concentrating on our relationship between the individual and God.
Yes.
And we aren't too concerned about, you know, whole community and...
Yes.
Yes. And I would say that would be application here for us.
Yes.
But we would probably have to develop our own on
way of working that out in our society. Yeah. I feel that very deeply, and I think that's one thing which motivates me to want to share these things, because when we're talking about peace, you can't have peace without justice.
Yeah.
And just remember all that quarreling business on the hunt. Mm-hmm. When that kind of thing is going on, things don't work in society. And so that human relationship level is just crucial.
Are they the people that are peaceful? Is there much fighting or much quarreling?
I think that there's much fighting and quarreling that goes on there as goes on between us. What is intriguing is that they have some traditional ways of dealing with it, and ways which in their society work. And that by Christians, they're making some associations here as they reflect on the New Testament message of the peace Jesus brings, mm-hmm. to say now that, the real thing is that peace mm-hmm. that Jesus brings. Mm-hmm. And of course, anybody who can say that, that's a statement of faith, a new faith for them. And that's a wonderful thing.
You did mention somebody coming back from prison.
Yes.
What cause are they in prison?
That could be for any reason, but whatever the reason, if they had spent some time in prison, something had not very peaceful had gone on in that person's life. And you might say, here's a Simbo person. Now, I don't know if you were in on our discussion of Simbo. Simbo is a term among the Baya which stands for, symbolizes, we could say, the sacred. And a Simbo person is one who has violated the sacred, in other words, violated the gift of life itself in some way or another, either by killing someone or by, there are many ways to violate one another. And if that person had been guilty of violating the principle of life in one way or another, he or she needs to be cooled when returning into the society again. And the woman peace thrower is there to receive the person back into the community again, but only that the way may be clear and clean for that re-entry. Sorry is at the center of that way again. Mm-hmm. As we would say, Jesus at the center of that way again, for a person who needs to be born again into...
Basically, all we do is give the person some money and then go.
Yeah.
Yes. Very little in the way of reading.
And here you see, mm-hmm. right, and here you see that whole matter of religion being separated from the rest of life is not the case. There is no separation between the sacred and profane here, but it's one reality.
Yeah.
And Sori is at the center of that reality. Now, again, that's something that, motivates me to share some of these things, because as we translate that into our situation as Christians, we must confess that Jesus is at the center of all reality. He is our center. We are people of the center.
You suggest by the map that these Baya people mm-hmm. occupy a huge territory.
Yes.
Okay. Do they all go by the same rules?
Within those, let's say, 500,000 or more people, for whom, the term Baya could describe that ethnic group. Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that where I have tried to discover, the extent to which Sori is meaningful among those people, it is extended in an area where the dialect, for example, that Sharon and I learned and used, that extent, Sori, is important for Baya speakers of many other dialects.
Do you think that probably the reason that it works better for this type of group is because they all use the same terms, they all use the same, they settle their problems in the same way, whereas we have so many faiths
mm-hmm.
in our organization of the United States
that
one sect does one thing to punish, another does another, and some people overlook it.
Yes. I think you've really pointed to a problem we experience mm-hmm. In our culture, which and is not homogeneous in the same way as we have in the bioculture. And so what are those symbols for us then? So that's some of the questions that I've asked before here. You go into that culture and you find really life-giving symbols, symbols which mediate life for the well-being of society. Now, what are some symbols in our own culture which may do that for us? Or do we find exposure to these symbols from Africa helpful for us, helpful for our imagination? For one thing, I can answer that myself by saying, for one thing, it throws me back to scriptural images. For example, the tree of life image, which I find so rich, but the water image too, you know, and putting water in our midst. There are those influences from other cultures, and yet there's a certain each one keeps their own turf, so to speak. They're contiguous. Pastor Mueller, Jim?
We have emphasized separation of church and state, and that's legitimate, but we have included that as the separation of religion from life.
Yes.
There's no place for religion, really, in any cultural way to influence.
Yes.
The schools can't do it.
Yes.
And I think that's our basic problem.
Yeah, how that gets worked out, and again, if all the kids in school in a given school were, let's say, of the same faith, that's what, there's a homogeneity again. But in our culture, that's not the case. We're running late, not late, we have a few minutes left, but I do have a number of other questions I would have liked to get into here. I appreciate, I wish we had a lot more time to discuss these kinds of questions. I would just like to note a couple of things about Sori that intrigues me here, before just a word then about how we might reinterpret some things. One is that Sori here again, as we consider the problem that we have as human beings on our quest for food. Now, we all have this problem that it seems to me that we take life in order to live. We go out and kill animals or whatever in order to live. Now, there's certain ambiguity in that, that it seems that in the Gaia system seems to be taken into account, that we're stuck with the ambiguity of having to take life in order to live. For the Gaia, Sori is a way through the mysterious necessity involved with having to take life in order to live. Sori is right at the center of that. I think we can make some switches here again, translating some of those ideas into Christian terms. Let me just conclude then by suggesting a few things how we might go in a reinterpretation. Sori is for blessing in the quest for food, where we take life in order to live. Jesus, our Sori Cool Thing, teaches us to pray, "Give us today our daily bread." He affirms that we should be seeking food, telling us that the laborer deserves his food. He affirms that we need to eat. But his message, ministry, and way of life reveal a cross at the center, which says, "I give my life for my friends." Again, as we reinterpret, as I've tried to do in each case, each session, there is a retention of Sori meanings from its original context, but as the gospel is brought into conversation with that Gaia context, there is also a critique which the gospel brings to that situation. There is a newness in Jesus which we do not have in Sori. Because to say Jesus our Sori Cool Thing, Sori has to get a new content. One day, Jesus' friends said to him, "Teacher, eat." But Jesus our Sori Cool Thing answered, I have food to eat of which you do not know. A new thing. My food is to do the will of him who sent me and to accomplish his work. The whole kingdom perspective is opened up here before us in the gospel. His food consists in feeding us, and he feeds us with food to share with still others. Baya used to create a village. I mean, there were clan relationships there. When Jesus is the center of our village, we have now a global village. It's a bigger scene. When Sori Cool Thing, when Jesus, our Sori Cool Thing, blesses us and gives us what we need to eat, the bread of life, he calls himself, he also empowers us to share our food with people we had never dreamed of eating with before. The original context is here blown apart by the gospel. He blesses our own quest for food, and he also blesses our giving of that food to others with an unexpected joy. He says it's more blessed to give than to receive. What our Sori Cool Thing gives to us that our joy may be full is the gift of his cross. Now that's an ambiguous symbol in our midst. So when we pray, give us today our daily bread, we are thereby seeking his strength, really, to bear one another's burdens as he bears our burdens on the cross. Well, as we take some meanings out of an African context, bring the gospel into conversation with those meanings, and let the gospel pick up on some of those meanings, but give a new content as well. Well, I know that our hearts are throbbing for, or is it another part of our anatomy, for the barbecue. So I'm going to let us go get some. I just want to say that next week, if you are here, I'm going to spend 2 days with initiation, and would appreciate you joining me for those sessions, if you can do so. Thank you. Monday and Tuesday.
Same time.
That I don't know. That'll be discussed on Sunday. Thanks very much.